Yeah, I don't know, where is he, this can be a good thing. Yeah, no, this, I think that's it, I think there's only one volume.
All right, we'll say let's begin. So today's daf is Chav Tes, but we left off on Chav Ches Amud Beis. So if you remember again, we left off actually by Katan She'ino Tzarech Li'imo, pretty much middle of the page. So remember again, the Mishnah said, this is on Chav Ches Amud Beis, the Mishnah said that a child that does not need its mother is Chayiv in Sukkah. So the Gemara now says, the following. What is the case of a child who does not require his mother? Meaning, how do you assess that state objectively? So in the Yeshiva Rabbi Yanai, they said, any child who can go to the bathroom and does not need its mother to clean the child afterwards. Rabbi Shimon says, Kol Shner Mishnaso, Ve'ino Kore Ima, any child who wakes up in the morning and doesn't call out for its mother. So the Gemara says, 1 second, Gidolim Nami Karu. But even older children, when they wake up, will sometimes call for their mother. Ela Ima, Kol Shneor Ve'ino Kore Ima Ima. Rather, what we're talking about over here is a child who wakes up and doesn't incessantly call mommy, mommy, meaning that the child is inconsolable until the mother ultimately comes. So we'll say, this is how the Shulchan Aruch also paskins. This is in Siman Tov Resh Mem. Let me actually read this to you quickly. So in Siman Tov Resh Mem, the Shulchan Aruch writes, I'm sorry, just quickly, so we can close this out. This is Tafresh Mem, Sif Beis. So the Shulchan Aruch writes, Katan Sheno Tzarech Limo, a child who does not require his mother, Shuhu Keben Chamish Keben Sheish. So the Shulchan Aruch says that at the age of 5 or 6 years old, Chayiv B'Sukkah Medivrei Sofrin, is Chayiv in Sukkah Medirabanan, obviously, again, this is not a biblical obligation because you can't become biblically obligated until you reach the age of adulthood. But midrabanan, he will be chayiv because of chinuch. The Mishnah Berura comments on this and he says, "Kol chad kifum churfei," quotes the Taz in the Magen Avraham, that ultimately, when the Shulchan Aruch says 5 or 6, the Shulchan Aruch is making a general statement. But it's every child according to his level of maturity. So whenever the child exhibits a level of maturity enough to be in the sukkah, independent of its clinging to its mother, l'maaseh again, the child will be obligated midrabanan in the mitzvah of sukkah. So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, "Maaseh v'yaldo kalas." So remember again, the Mishnah finishes saying that a child is patur from sukkah, and then right after the Mishnah quotes that. So the Mishnah quotes a story of Beis Shammai had a grandson. And after his grandson was born, he removed the rooftop from on top of the cradle of the baby and placed schach there. So the Gemara says, Maisa listor. So is the Mishnah quoting a story for the purpose of contradicting what it just said before? Because once again, the Mishnah inherently contradicts itself. The Mishnah begins by saying that a child's not chayiv in sukkah. And then 2 seconds later, the Mishnah quotes a story of Shammai putting schach on top of the baby's cradle, indicating that the child is obligated in sukkah. So what's going on? To which the Gemara says, Chisui mechshav v'halchi katani. In reality, there is a piece missing from the Mishnah, and here's how it should read. V'shamai machmir. What the Mishnah is supposed to read is the statement. A child is pater from sukkah, but Shammai was machmir. Well, how do we see that Shammai was machmir? Because there was a story where the daughter-in-law of Shammai gave birth, and literally he removed the plaster, and he placed schach on top of the cradle for the child. So I will say what ultimately comes out is that halacha l'maisa, the katan is not chayev in sukkah, but the Mishnah is just recording an episode where Shammai was more machmir for himself and for his family, says the Mishnah. Kol shivas hayomim, all 7 days, Adam oses sukaso keva ubeis so arai. for all 7 days of Sukkot, Rabbosai, a person makes his sukkah, his permanent dwelling, and his home, his temporary dwelling, which is another way of saying that all activities of daily living are transferred into the sukkah. Yardu gishamim, if it rains, me'imasai mutar lifnos, Rabbosai, very important halacha. If it rains on Sukkot, at what point in time is one permitted to move back into the house? Mishatisrach hamikvah. Mishatisrach hamikvah literally means when the porridge would get spoiled. So if it would rain enough that the porridge would get spoiled, you could go back into the house. Mashal ma'adavadomer. What could this be compared to? Le'evet shebalimzog kos l'rabo. This can be compared to a servant who comes to pour a cup for his master. V'shafach lo kiton alpano, and he pours it on his face. Then I will say, we'll discuss exactly what this mashal means. The Mishnah is saying the mashal of when it rains on Sukkot is like the servant that comes to pour a water for his master. And the water, well, we'll see who pours what in whose face, but somebody's pouring it back in someone's face. We'll see in the Gemara. Turn around, Abanam. Kol shivas hayamim adam oseh sukaso keva ubeso arai. All 7 days, a person makes his sukkah his permanent dwelling, and his home his temporary dwelling. Ketzad. So how do you accomplish this? Hayu lo kelim noim. If a person had nice utensils, ma'alon lo sukkah. A person brings them into the sukkah. Matzos nos. Person has nice pillows or nice cushions. Ma'alon lo sukkah. You bring them into the sukkah. Ochal v'shoseh. You eat and you drink. Umetayel. Rabosei metayel literally means like to tour around, but it means you walk around, you spazier. B'sukkah, everything done in your sukkah. Minahani mili, how do we know this? That essentially on sukkah, we transfer the activities of daily living into the sukkah, the Tanrabanan, because we learned, teshvu ke'in taduru. Because the Pasuk says, basukos teshvu shivas yamim, you shall dwell in the sukkah for 7 days, and we learn from that, teshvu, that you should dwell in the sukkah, ke'in taduru, in the way that you would normally live in your house. Mikan Amru, from here we learned, or from here we say, Kol Shiva Sayamim Osa Adam Sukaso Keva Ubeso Arai. From here we say, says the Braisa, that for all 7 days of Sukkot, a person makes his Sukkah the permanent dwelling and his home the temporary dwelling. And now the Braisa restates this, Ketzad, how do you do this? How you locate a Naim, if a person had nice utensils in his home, ma'alin the sukkah, you bring them into the sukkah. Matzos nos, nice pillows or cushions. Ma'alin the sukkah, you bring them into the sukkah. Ochal v'shose umetayel b'sukkah, you eat, you drink, you hang around all in the sukkah. Umeshanein b'sukkah. And I will say, here's what's interesting. So the Gemara, now the Braisa says, Meshanein, you learn in the sukkah. You also learn in the sukkah. So the Gemara says, Ini, is that true that you should learn in the sukkah? V'ha'amar Rava, Rava said, Mikra u'misna b'matlalasa. You should learn, Mikra b'osa means chumash. Misna means mishnah. Those things you should learn in the sukkah. V'tanuye banim bar mit mimitlasa. But tanuye you should do outside of the sukkah. Now what does tanuye mean? If you look at Rashi, Rashi says over here, look in the Rashi, bar mimat lulasa. Rashi says, if you look at the last phrase there, he says, kasaka daite tanuye haya mishanim. And I both say, we're assuming right now that the word tanuye, haya mishanim, means to learn. So what it sounds like over here is you could do chumish and you could do mishnah in the sukkah, but tanuye, if you want to learn a little bit more in depth, that does not have to be done inside the sukkah. Now, why is that? Look at Rashi. Bar mimat lelasa im yertze demitztairhu umitztair potu min asukah v'ha'avir yafel alaharchiv daito. So it also is very interesting. What the Braisa seems to be saying is you are permitted simple things you can learn inside the sukkah, but if you want to learn things more in depth, you can learn that outside of the sukkah, because apparently to be able to learn things in depth, you need space. You need space. The fresh air is good. The scenery is good. And to be confined within a hut perhaps may stymie the intellectual creative process. Therefore, you can go outside of the sukkah. So we see from here that you don't have to learn in the sukkah, to which the Gemara says, lo kashya, ha b'migras, ha b'iyune. It depends what you're learning. Look at Rashi, ha b'migras, kilomar trei gavni shinun havu. Rabbi said there are two types of learning. Gemara ha brurolo, Gemara ha brurolo kvar, v'haynu shmaita, sarech sukkah v'haynu mishani. So Rabbi said, again, if you're already reviewing something you've learned before, that should be done in the sukkah. Because that you don't need too much intellectual concentration to be able to, because you already learned it, you're only reviewing it. Li'iyune, Rashi says, b'mimatlasa. But to analyze something in depth, that can be done outside of the Sukkah. Rabbi say, what the Gemara is presupposing over here is that a person needs fresh air and a person needs space in order to be able to think about things. Again, obviously, if a person doesn't need that and they can do it in the Sukkah, they should do it in the Sukkah. What the Gemara is saying is, at the end of the day, we don't want the Sukkah to compromise your Talmud Torah experience, and therefore, whatever you can do in the Sukkah, do in the Sukkah, and whatever can't be done in the Sukkah can be done on the outside, top of Chav Tes. Okay.
Okay, that's saying he gets too involved, he gets too worried that he's going to be put in a Sukkah.
No. No, Rashi's not saying that. If you could look at, we could look at it again. Rashi says over here, he said, you're looking at Rashi Barmi Mitlalasa. So Rashi says, in Yirtza, the Mitzta'erhu. Right? If he wants to go out because he's a Mitzta'er, why is he a Mitzta'er? Because he can't learn well. Because he can't learn well. The Umitzta'er Patra Minasuka. And ultimately, again, if he's so upset that he can't learn well, then Lamaisa, again, technically, he's Patra from Sukkah. But again, fresh air is good for him. Laharchiv daito, to be able for him to be able to concentrate. Kasaka daito, and that's where Rashi is. Kasaka daito, tani hanim shani. So the ideal over here is, again, Rashi is using this concept of mitzta'er a little bit loosely. What Rashi is saying is that lemaisa, again, a person wants to go ahead and be able to learn in depth. The ability to learn in depth for some cannot come within a confined space, and therefore lemaisa he can go outside of the sukkah. Top of Choftes, kiha dirava. So I'll say it's interesting. Mesura Sashas changes this. Kiha dirava, dirava Rami Bar Chama. Rav and Rami Bar Chama kiha vokaimi mikame derav Chista, when they were before Rav Chista, meaning when they were learning before Rav Chista. Merahati bigimara b'hadi hadadi v'hadar ma'ayni b'svara. So also it's very interesting, when Rava and Rami Bar Chama used to learn, I guess it was in the yeshiva of Rav Chista, the first thing they would do is when they would make a leaning on the Gemara, they would go through everything quickly. Also it's actually a very interesting approach to learning, that sometimes there is a concept of first kind of going through whatever sugya quickly in order to be able to give yourself like a bird's eye panoramic view, and then go back and learn it more in depth afterwards. So when Rav and Rami Bar Chama were chavrusas, they would first go through everything quickly. That's what in merahati b'gemara, they would go through the Gemara quickly. Rashi says merahati b'gemara, mashashamo mipiv davar ploni aser davar ploni mutter. In this case, Gemara means they were chazering the shir of Rav Chista. So they would chaz the share of Rav Chista quickly, and then afterwards, v'hadar afterwards, ma'ayni b'svara. Then they would try to go into afterwards what halacha lemaisa, you know, what the svara, what the in-depth analysis of it was. So we'll say, oh, the Gemara is only bringing this down to show you that there are two parts to one's learning. There is the general, I guess, what we call like a Vikias type idea. There's a general overview, panoramic idea, which doesn't necessarily require incredible intellectual concentration. And then there's the iun. And the iun itself requires exceptional concentration, diligence, and really intellectual application. And what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that the Bikias part can take place in the sukkah, but if a person said they need the expansiveness of the outside for the iun part, they're permitted to leave the sukkah for that. Amar Rava, Mani Mishasya b'matlasa. Rava says, drinking utensils can be kept within the sukkah. Rashi says over here, mani mishasya kosos, cups. Mani michla, bar mimetla lasa. But eating utensils should be kept outside of the sukkah. The Rava says, it's very interesting, because there's a little machlokis Rashi tells us over here. If you look at Rashi, Rashi writes, mani michla, karos la'achar sha'achlu bahan tzarech lehotzion. Rashi understands what this is referring to is plates, forks, knives, after you have eaten. Obviously, after you've already eaten, these items become dirty. If you leave them on the table for too long, so the food gets caked on them, and it doesn't look nice. So after you finish eating, you should remove the utensils from the sukkah as quickly as possible. Tosas, on the other hand, if you look at the top Tosas on the top, Tosos says over here, V'yesh mefarshim, if I'm just skipping a little bit, like in the middle of the second line of Tosos, Mana de Michla, V'yesh mefarshim, kigon kederos, v'agni delisha. So Tosfos understands that some, first he quotes Rashi, and others explain that it actually refers to pots and kneading bowls. So Tosa says, it doesn't refer to eating utensils. It refers to what? Pots. So meaning, Abosai, again, you shouldn't bring your pots into the sukkah. Now, that's true even if what? That's true even if you are going to serve out of those pots. Now, so by the way, you should know, this is halacha l'maisa. This is codified in the Shulchan Aruch. This is in Simin Tov Reish Lamed Tes Sif Aleph. Halacha l'maisa, one should not bring pots into the sukkah. Like a soup pot. I'll tell you the one exception to this. Again, it's not brought down in the Shulchan Aruch, but it's brought down in contemporary poskim. You know, now they have these oven to table type of utensils, which are much nicer. They look like serving pieces. Those you could bring into the sukkah. But something that you would think about it this way. Something that you would not normally bring to your dining room table. Most people, when they're sitting in a dining room, nobody's really bringing in a pot of soup. I don't think so, at least. Right? Gigs, blank stares over here. Maybe most people are not bringing a pot of soup to their table. Even, I'm sorry. Most people not bring a pot of soup to the table. Therefore, the mice, whatever you would not bring to your table, your dining room, you would not bring into your sukkah.
Ceramic from a crock pot that you would, the power is out, you can lift it up and bring it. Would that be considered?
And bring, again, I'd say if you'd bring it to your table on Shabbos, if it's nice enough that you would put out when there's company, so you a soup tree would be fine. Correct. First of all, I'd say to the insert of the crock pot, where I think, again, most people would not bring that to the table on Shabbos. Okay, chatzva v'shochil barimat lalasa. Rabbi say chatzva. Rashi says chatzva is an earthenware utensil that's used to draw water, and shochil is a wooden pail. So these items barimat lalasa should be kept outside of the sukkah. Again, because these are items that would not normally be brought to your table at home. Ushraga b'mat lalasa, you can bring in your shraga. Rabbi say shraga is an earthenware lantern that can be brought inside the sukkah. Va'amrila barimat lalasa, and others say no, it must be kept outside of the sukkah. I say, so which one is it? V'lopli, there's no contradiction. Habesukah gidola, habesukah kitana. Rabbi say, if you have a large, see, what's interesting is these earthenware lamps, so they get very fashmutzed. They get very fashmutzed, they don't look nice. So what the Gemara is suggesting over here is if you have a small sukkah, or if you have a large sukkah, so you could put the lantern in a corner and no one's really going to see it, you could keep it inside the sukkah. But if you have a small sukkah, where the lantern will be very apparent and noticeable, you cannot have that in the sukkah. Yardu gishamim. So the Mishnah said, remember, if it rains, then halacha l'maisa, again, misha, what was the lashon there? Misha tisrach hamikva. Right, when the porridge ultimately will spoil, you can go inside. So the Gemara says the following: Tana, Misha Tisrach HaMikvah Shel Grisin. So the Gemara says, first of all, what kind of porridge are we talking about? We're talking about porridge of lentils. Rashi says, Grisin Memaheres the Kabel Kalkel B'Gishamim Me'at. Apparently, again, a lentil porridge gets very easily ruined even with a little bit of rain. So what the Gemara is saying over here is you don't need it to be pouring torrentially in order to go in. Rather, even if you have a food where a little bit of water would ruin it, you could go inside. Abai Havak Yosef Kamed Rav Yosef Imat Lalasa. Abai was sitting before Rav Yosef in the sukkah. Noshav Zeka, the wind blew. V'kamai Sitsi Busa. And what happens, Rabbi said, so his schach, he wasn't using bamboo. He was using like tree branches. And what happened when the wind blew? I don't know what kind of tree is it. You know where you have like those. Is it like an evergreen where you have the long green pine needles, right? Pine needles.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. So if you can imagine, that's the way I envision this. So what happened? The wind blows, and one of those pine needles, blows into his food. You get the point. Or you're using willow branches, aravos, like long willow branches. And arava fell. So the wind blew, and arava fell in. Amar lehu Rav Yosef. Amar lehu Rav. Amar lehu Rav Yosef. Panu li mani mehacha. So Rav Yosef said, turned to his attendant, and he said, pack my stuff up. We're going inside the house. So apparently Rav Yosef was very adversely affected by this pine needle that fell into his food. Let's go inside. Omrli Abayi, so what are you doing? V'hotna misha tisrach hamikva. But that's not what the Mishnah said. The Mishnah said you could go inside when? When there's enough rain for your food to spoil, right? It doesn't say anything about pine needles or a rubber leaves. Amarle, to which Rav Yosef responded, Lididi, Kevan da'anina datoi. For me, I am very fastidious. I'm very delicate. I'm very delicate and sensitive. Kemisha tisrach hamikvadamili. For me, a pine needle falls in. A pine needle falls into my food, or there's arava branches. For me, that's like a tsunami coming into the sukkah. I'm uncomfortable, right? But I am. There's a word. We'll say this. I'm sorry. An istinus, correct. We'll say this is what we call an halacha an istinus. So an istinus is an exceptionally delicate person who perhaps certain things that the rest of us would just kind of forget about bothers this person incredibly. So Rav Yosef says, I am an istinus. I am this exceptionally delicate person. And for me, this stuff falling in from the schach is enough to allow me to go inside the sukkah. And I'll say, look at Rashi, because this is quite interesting. Rashi says, Sivusa, Kismin shal schach haya masya ala ochel. Rav Yosef ma'anine da'asava. Rav Yosef was a very delicate person. I will say it's very interesting. Desanya quotes over the Gemara Maseches Pesachim. Shlosha chayein ene chayim. I will say there are three people literally whose lives are not lives. Meaning there are three people who have a very difficult time getting by in life. Harachmanim. I will say those who are exceptionally compassionate. Those who are exceptionally compassionate or empathic have a difficult time. Why? Because they live life with a lot of pain. Harashanin, those who get perpetually angry, have very difficult time forging relationships. Va'anini hadas, and those who are very delicate. She'inu yecholim lisbol shum davar mius, because they can't handle anything that is just a little bit like not nice. Va'am Rav Yosef kulu isnubi. Rav Yosef actually commented, I have all three of these problems. I'm too empathic, I have a short fuse, and I am an istinus. So ultimately, Rav Yosef goes back inside the sukkah. Now, I'll just show you something very interesting over here. In Siman Tov Resh Lamed Tes, Sif, actually, you know what, let's finish this sugya first, and then I'll tell you the halacha. Tan Rabbanan, Haya Ochel B'Sukkah, actually, let me just tell you this right now, because it's very interesting. So in Siman Tov Resh Lamed Tes, Sif Hey, so the Shulchan Aruch writes, Yardu Gishamim, Harezen Nichnas L'Sukkah Bayis. If a person goes ahead, it begins to rain, a person could go inside and eat their meal inside. From what point in time can you go inside once it starts to rain? When it's enough rain that the rain that falls into the food would ruin the food. And interesting enough, the Shulchan Aruch writes, Afilu tavshil shel pool. Even a dish made of lentils, which apparently spoils very quickly with additional water. So the Shulchan Aruch seems to adopt just the Shita as expressed in the Mishnah itself. Now, what's interesting over here is the following. The Mishnah Brura in Siman Lamed Beis says, V'imenashev haruach l'sol ha-sukkah. If it's very windy in the sukkah, v'al yidei zeh no shrim kesamim min haschach l'toch ha-machal. And as a result, The leaves from the schach are falling into the food. Im hu istinis sha'anina daite. If a person is an istinis that this bothers me very much, yachol lotzeis min asukah. A person can leave the sukkah. So what the Mishnah Brura says is that essentially the concept of rain is an objective statement in the eyes of Chazal, because again, once it's raining, again, I will say, there's no midos chasidos to sit in your sukkah, like to put on, you know, your shena coat and to sit there mamish when it's pouring down. There's no midos chasidos in that, because again, there's no mitzvah of sukkah when it's raining in that sense. That's no different than sitting in your sukkah tonight. There's no mitzvah like that when it's raining. What the Mishnah Brura is adding in over here is rain is the objective event that causes everyone to go inside. But if ein achinami, a person is very delicate, it's too hot, it's too cold, the wind is blowing and the leaves are falling into my soup, that would be grounds also for a person to go inside. Tan Rabbanan, Hayo ochel b'sukkah liyardu gishamin. A person was eating in the sukkah and then it began to rain. The yarat, and a person goes into the house. That's the lashon of yarat means. A person goes into the house. A person does not have to go back into the sukkah until he finishes his meal. See, I might have thought that when I go inside, every 2 seconds I have to be looking out the window. Did it stop? Did it stop? And as soon as it stopped, I have to go back into my house. The Mishnah says, the Brisa says, that's not the case. Once you go in, you can finish your meal inside. Similarly, similarly, if a person was sleeping in the sukkah and it began to rain, the yara, then a person then goes inside. In matrichin also la'alos ad shigeyar. We don't require a person to go inside to go back into the sukkah ad shigeyar. So the Gemara says ibaylahu ad shigeyar or ad shigeyar. So the Gemara says, which one is it? Is it yeyar or yeyar? Now, we'll say, if you'll notice again, those two words are spelled two different ways. Sheyeyar with an ayin means get up, and sheyeyar with an aleph means dawn. So we'll say, here's what the Braisa said. The Braisa said, if it was raining and I went inside to sleep, so I don't have to go back into the sukkah ad sheyeyar. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? Does that mean I don't have to go back into the sukkah until I get up? Or don't have to go back into the sukkah until it dawns? And Rabbi said, the nafkamina between that is, so do I have to try to get myself back up at dawn in order to be able to get into the sukkah? Or do we say, no, I could sleep, and whenever I get up, I get up. And at that point, when I get up, assuming it's not raining, I'll go back into the sukkah. To which the Gemara says, Tashma, ad sheyeyor v'ya'ala amud ha-shachar. Literally, ad sheyeyor, and the dawn arises. So the Gemara says, Tarti. So first of all, the Gemara says, it can't be yeyor with an aleph, because Yeor and Ya'ala Amud HaShachar, Rabosa, are two different times of the dawn. Ela Ema Ad SheYeor V'Ya'ala Amud HaShachar. Rather, the Halacha says like this, until you wake up and dawn arises. So Rabosa, what does that mean? Halacha L'Maisa. It means that if it began to rain and a person came back into the house, so a person is only obligated to go back into the sukkah at what point in time? Until two things have happened. Dawn has dawned and the person has woken up. So, for example, let's say I wake up 2 o'clock in the morning and it turns out that it stopped raining. I do not have to go back into the sukkah. And for that matter, nor do I have to set my alarm clock or, you know, make sure someone wakes me up at dawn in order to get back into the sukkah. Rather, when do I have to move back into the sukkah? At the point when I wake up in the morning. Mashal Mahadavar Domem. So the Mishnah said, when it rains on sukkahs, to what can this be compared? Could be compared to the servant who comes to his master with a pitcher of water. And he throws it in his face. So the Gemara says, "Ibaylahu mi shafach lami." Who is pouring the water in whose face in this mashal? To which the Gemara says, "Tashma, the sign is shafach lo rabo kiton apanav va'amar lo efshi bishimushech." To which the Braisa says that when it rains on Sukkot, Rabosai, it is the equivalent as if we bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu the pitcher of wine or the pitcher of water, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu pours it back on the servant's face and says, I do not want your service. Mm-hmm. So Chazal understood that when the weather makes it such that we are unable to perform the mitzvah, so to speak, it's as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is pouring the water back in our face, telling us that he's not interested ultimately in our service. It's interesting that the Rishonim seem to understand that the real application of this is really to the first night of Sukkot, because the first night of Sukkot ultimately, again, is when there's a mitzvah mid-de-oraisa to go ahead and perform the mitzvah of Sukkah. But for the rest of the evening or days of Sukkot, this mashal might not apply as intensely. So the Gemara goes weiter. And we'll say first wide line, Chav Tesem and Aleph. Now, once the Gemara talks about events that seem to express divine displeasure. So the Gemara goes in and brings another number of examples of this as well. Tanur Abanas, we learned in a Braisa. Bizman Shachamaloka, this means when the light of the sun is stricken, which seems to indicate when the light of the sun is diminished, the sun doesn't burn as bright. Simin Ra L'Chol HaOlam. This is a bad simin for the entire world. To what can this be compared? This can be compared to a king of flesh and blood, who made a su'udah for his servants, and he left the lantern in front of them. It was obviously because, again, you want to have light. You want to have light for the su'udah. The king then got angry at his servants, and he said to his servant, his attendant, "Tol panas mipnehem, v'oshivein b'choshech." Take the lantern from in front of them and let them live in the darkness. So too, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu dims the light of the sun, so ultimately, again, that's indicative that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is displeased with us. Tanya, Rabbi Meir Ramir says, Kol zman shema oros lokim, simin ra lishson ehem shal yisrael. Rabbi Meir says, whenever any of the luminaries are stricken, which means we're both saying their light is diminished, it is a bad sign for the enemies of the Jewish people. Now remember, enemies of the Jewish people is a euphemism for us, right? For ultimately people who sin, for Jews who sin. So Jews who sin are called Sonein Shal Yisrael. So Rabbi Meir says, whenever any of the luminaries are stricken, that is a bad sign for those who have committed averos. Why? Mipnei shemilu madir mamakos sayin. Because I will say, we are used to being punished. Now, what does this mean? Look at Rashi. It's the last short line of Rashi. Komine poronios, now first wide line. Komine poronios shabbat in la'olam. All types of difficulties and suffering that come to this world. Yesh lahem li Yisrael lidog v'lomar. Jewish people always have to worry and say to themselves, lo ba simen ze ela bishvilinu. This simen, this omen about a punishment is only here for us. Yosemi bishar umos. Mipnei shehin regilin lilkos yosemi kulam. We'll say it's actually a very tragic statement. Rabbi Meir says that whenever there's some type of omen, that something bad is going to happen in the world, Klal Yisrael, we should brace ourselves. We should brace ourselves. Why? Because generally, if there's one nation that suffers on the face of this world, it's Klal Yisrael. So when there's an omen that something negative is going to occur, because we are milumadin b'makosin, we are used to being afflicted, we should realize, we should perhaps brace ourselves for something negative. Mashal, the Gemara gives a mashal, a sofer shebala beis ha-sefer, when the Rebbe came to the yeshiva, uritzua biyado, and he's holding his ruler in his hand, right? That's the patching ruler. And what happens? Mi doig, which kid gets worried? Mi sheragil lilkos b'chol yom v'yom. You know who gets worried? The kid who gets patched every single day when he sees the Rebbe approaching with the ruler, then ultimately, again, he knows, chances are there's something in it for me. When the sun is stricken, again, light is diminished. It's a bad omen for idolaters. That's a sign that idolaters are going to be punished. If the light of the moon is diminished, that is a simon ultimately that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to punish the sinners among the Jewish people. Why? Now why? Mipnei sheyisra monon levana va'obdei kochavim lechama. Very simply, because again, the nations of the world count time according to the sun. We count time according to the moon. Therefore, again, whoever luminary is stricken ultimately is indicative that that particular group may be subject to divine punishment. B'mizrach, when the sun above the kochavim lechama, if the sun, while it is in the east, is stricken, meaning its light is diminished in the east, that's a bad sign for those who dwell in the east. If it's stricken in the west, that's a bad sign for those who dwell in the west. If it's stricken in the middle of the heavens, simin ra lechala olam kulo. That is a bad simin for everyone. Panav domin ledam. If the sun is exceptionally red, cherev bali olam. That is a symbol. That is a sign that bloodshed is going to come to the world. Lesak. If the sun looks like sackcloth, which Rabbi Yosef means its light is diminished, chitzei ra'av ba'in la'olam. That's a sign, literally, that the arrows of famine are going to descend upon the world. Luzu uluzu. I guess this means if on one hand it has a reddish hue, but yet it still looks somewhat diminished, then cherev v'chitze ra'av ba'enom. That is a sign that both war and famine will come to the world. Loke b'chnisaso, poronos shohelavo. If the light of the sun is stricken at the time when the sun is setting, that shows that the difficulties are not going to come immediately, but rather, again, they'll come at some distant time. Be it siaso ever, if the light of the sun is stricken as the sun is rising, so bimaheres level, that shows that what? That the paronos, the negative events, are going to come quickly. The ish omrim, others say chiluf hadvarim, just the opposite. The ein lecha kol uma v'uma shaloke, she'ein eloheha loke ima. And I will say, whenever a nation is stricken, literally eloheha, Eloheha, we would normally translate as God. But here it doesn't mean God. If you look at Rashi, Eloheha, this is actually 2, 4, 6 lines up from the bottom in Rashi, middle of the line, Eloheha. Sara hamelitz ba'ada, kegon Samael, shahaya eish sar sha'isa. Rabosai, each nation has a ministering angel. Each nation has a ministering angel. So therefore, the Gemara is saying over here is that when a nation is afflicted, its ministering angel is afflicted along with it. Shnei Emar, as the pasuk says, "Ubechol Elohei Yisrael eses shvatim," because the Kadosh Baruch Hu says, literally, with the gods of Egypt shall I mete out justice, and this is a reference ultimately to the ministering angel of Egypt. Ubizman she Yisrael osin ratzono shamak. The Rebbe says, very beautiful. When we fulfill the will of God, then you know what? Ein misyarin mikol elu. We have no need to fear all of these We have no need to fear all of these omens. So we'll say it's very interesting. After the Gemara discusses all of these omens, so the Gemara says, oh, and by the way, when we serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when we're close to God, when the relationship is tight, we don't have to fear any omens. Shine Emar, because the Pasuk says, Ko Amar Hashem, El Derech HaGoyim Al Telamdu, from the ways of the Gentiles do not learn, Ume Osos HaShamayim Al Techasu, and from the omens of the heavens do not be fearful, Ki Yechasu HaGoyim Meima, for only the nations of the world need to fear them. Ovdei Kochavim Yechasu, only idolaters need to fear these omens, Ve'en Yisrael Yechasu, but we need not fear these omens. Tan Rabbanan, Bishvil Arba'a Dvarim Chama Loke. It will say there are four reasons why the light of the sun is afflicted. I will say, remember again, this idea of the light of the sun being afflicted represents what? Represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu's displeasure with the world. Going back to what we said before, the first mashal was where the king goes ahead and makes a suda for his servants, puts light there, and then when he becomes displeased with his servants, what does he do? He commands his eved to go ahead and remove the lantern. So whenever the light of the sun is diminished, it's indicative of divine displeasure. So the Gemara says, well, why does the light of the sun become diminished? Because of four things, the light of the sun is diminished. Al av beis din shenes. Rabbi said, when av beis din, the head of the court, head of the Sanhedrin dies. Ve'ino nispad kahalocha, and he was not eulogized properly. Ve'al na'ara ha'me'urasa shetzaka ba'ir ve'in moshiyala. And I will say, remember, na'ara ha'me'urasa is the betrothed maiden who's violated by another man. And she calls out in the city, and no one comes to her aid. Ve'al mishkav zachar, homosexuality. Ve'al shnei achin shenishpach domin ke'echad. And for two brothers whose blood was spilled at the same time. Rabbi Osai, when these things happen within society, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is exceptionally displeased with the world and ultimately causes the light of the sun to be diminished. Now, it's interesting over here, if you look at Rashi, Rashi says, Ovei b'shil dalet dvarim, this is very interesting, Rashi says, Lo shamati tam bedavar. So Rashi says, I don't know why these four things. So we'll say, just a quick look at it would seem to indicate that these represent major pillars of society. If the head of the court died and wasn't eulogized properly, what does that show? That's a lack of Kavanah Torah. So if society does not have Kavanah Torah, you know, we'll say, it's very interesting that we're obligated to respect Talmidei Chachamim. And the reason for that is because respecting Talmidei Chacham is one of the ways that we cultivate the respect for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you can't respect the Basar of Adam, if you can't respect a human being who embodies Torah, I'm not going to respect HaKadosh Baruch Hu either. Because if I can't respect a tangible being who's devoted his life to Torah in front of me, I'm not going to. So therefore, again, number one is a society that is not careful with Kavanah Torah. Na'ara ha'me'urasa. Mishkav Zachar, so Na'ara Muras Mishkav Zachar represent what? Homosexuality, Na'ara Murasa, represent breaches in morality. Now, I will say they represent two different breaches. So homosexuality would represent the aberration in morality. And ultimately, again, Na'ara Ha'me'urasa represents the lack of, they both represent lack of boundaries within sexual relationships. Na'ara Ha'me'urasa represents a normative relationship between a man and woman, but outside of the normal accepted boundaries of relationships, Mishkav Zachar represents the total aberration in sexual morality.
But isn't Na'ara Ha'me'urasa the focus there is the Ein Moshiach?
The Ein Moshiach, correct. No one's stepping in to prevent these things from occurring. That's right. Society is allowing this to go on and no one's stepping in. The fact that the Na'ara Ha'me'urasa may be violated in the field and no one's there, you can't prevent crime. Crime is going to happen, but that society should allow these, the same idea. They allow the Talmid Chacham to be buried and not a proper eulogy. Society is allowing for lack of Kavanah Torah. Society is allowing for a lack, ultimately, of morality. Va'al shnei achen shenishpach daman ke'echer. Rabbi said that also seems to refer also to a breach in morality, but in this case, it's the breach of morality of human dignity. The idea of two brothers being wiped out at once represents the erasure of a familial line. So this idea is, again, family. So you have a society that is not makbid on Kavanah Torah, a society that is not makbid on morality, and a society that is not makbid on human dignity. And it's actually interesting, the progression, right? Because where does it all start with? What does it all start with? Kavod HaTorah. If you don't have Kavod HaTorah, there's a domino effect. Everything else falls out of whack as well. If you don't have Kavod HaTorah, then ultimately, again, you will not be able to sustain normal moral norms, and you will not be able to maintain proper human dignity towards the other. It's interesting. In any event, I don't know. Probably because I'm wrong. Just what I think. I don't know. Ubishil arba dvarim ma'oros lokin. And because of four things, ultimately the luminaries are stricken. Why? Al kosve plaster. So as I kosve plaster, Rashi points out over here, are people who write fraudulent shtaros. They write fraudulent shtaros. Rashi points out, kosve plaster, shtaros mizuyafin, umichtave amalushum dofi al adam lichtov bishma mashlot siva. So it's actually interesting. What this specifically refers to is people will write proclamations in the name of people who never actually said anything. So they'll write down, so-and-so said this, even though they didn't actually say it. Va'al mi'ide edos sheker, those who go ahead and give false testimony. Va'al megadli behem adaka beretz Yisrael, those who raise small animals in Eretz Yisrael. It's actually very interesting. We saw this actually in Shabbos, and I'll see this again in further sugyas, that there was a ban on raising small livestock in Eretz Yisrael, because small livestock is very difficult to control, and they will go to graze on property that is not theirs. So there was a ban against raising certain types of small animals in Eretz Yisrael. Bless you. Va'al kotet se ilonos tovos, and those who destroy perfectly good trees. Va'al tashchis. So we'll say people who do these four things ultimately cause the sun, light of the sun, to be diminished. Or b'shil, this is actually very interesting. B'shil dal dvarim. For four reasons. So rich people lose their assets. Literally, their assets are given over to the monarchy. That's nichse balibatim. The property of balibatim is given over to the government. Why? Number one, amashe shtaros pruim, because they hold on to paid up loan documents. I will say again, if I loan someone money and they repay the debt, so the Gemara says one of two things: either I'm supposed to give the document back to the borrower, or I'm supposed to destroy it. What's the problem if I hold on to it? I can technically fraudulently collect again. So those balabatim who hold on to already paid documents, va'amalavi beribis, or for those ultimately who lend with interest, which of course is aser, va'al shahaya safik or sipik biyadam limchos. Rabbi says it's very interesting. And for those who had the ability to object but did not, look at Rashi, actually quite interesting. Al shayo sipek biyadam shabali batim halal limchos biyad ovre avero shebedorom shevdvarim nishma machmas oshram va'abrios yireh mehem v'lo michu. Rabbi says this is amazing. Do you know that wealth, when used the right way, can be very powerful? Why? Because people respect wealth. If a person has wealth, they also have the ability to help direct society in the right way. If a person has wealth but does not use his influence when he sees things wrong that are happening, ultimately, says the Gemara, that's cause for the forfeiture of that wealth. If you have wealth and you have influence and you have power or the potential for power and you don't use it for the right purposes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes away your wealth. Use again, as Rashi says over here, you see people committing sins and you could have rebuked them and they would have respected you because of your wealth. Ultimately, the Gemara says a person loses their wealth if they don't use it properly. Furthermore, and furthermore, for those who go out and pledge tzedakah in public and don't fulfill their pledges, so such a person also loses their wealth. Amarav. For four reasons, the property of balibatim yotzim means gets destroyed. In the previous case, so the property of the balibatim was not getting destroyed; it was being taken by the government. Now the Gemara says, for four reasons, because of four things, the property of balibatim is destroyed. Al kov shei schar socher, for those who don't pay their employees on time. Va'al oshke schar socher, Rashi says over here, oshek legamre goes al scharo, for those who steal from their employees, meaning I will say kovesh means you don't pay on time. Oshek, Oshek means you don't pay at all. Va'al sheparkin ol me'at savarein minosin al chavarein. And for those of us, it's actually very profound. For those who go ahead and lift responsibility off their shoulders and put it on the shoulders of others. It's actually a very interesting yisod. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu has blessed a person with means, that means a person has the ability to direct things around. People respect wealth. So if you have wealth, it means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects you to do things. And again, not just give money, not just give tzedakah, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects you to take certain leadership roles within your community, within greater society. If you don't go ahead and rise to that occasion, literally, you take your responsibility and you place it on the shoulders of others, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, and you know what? You don't need the wealth. If you think that your wealth is there just to make you happy, just to allow you to enjoy, then you don't understand the bracha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given you. So if you take the responsibility that you should have shouldered and you put it on someone else's shoulders, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no problem, I can go ahead and take back the wealth. Va'al gasas haruach, and for those who become haughty and arrogant as a result of their wealth, v'gasas ruach keneged kulam. And the truth is, out of all these mentioned, arrogance is the worst. Keneged kulam. Aval ba'anovim, when it comes to those who are humble, k'siv, va'anovim yirshu aretz, the humble will inherit the earth, v'yis'angu al ro shalom, and they will delight with the abundance of peace. Hadron alach hayashem. So let's go a little bit further. I just want to share with you something interesting, a piece of halacha that, and then we're going to start the next parak, that we didn't get a chance to do the other day, but I thought was quite interesting. If you remember, again, 2 days ago, we spoke about the mitzvah, or I should say the concept of women in sukkah. And remember again, the Gemara discussed the idea about how we know that women are exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah. And so we did that in 2 ways. The Gemara said mitzvah shazman grama. But then we rejected that. Why do we reject that? Because why? Because by sukkah, there's teshvu ke'en taduru. You have to dwell in the sukkah the way you dwell in your house. And just like in your house, it's man and wife live together. So too in sukkah, it's man and wife. I would have thought man and wife live together as well. That's why the Gemara actually ended up saying there's a halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai that exempts women from sukkah. But there's a very interesting application of this in Siman Tav Reish Lamed Tes, Sif Beis. So the Ramah makes a comment on this. The Ramah says, "Umash shenoagin lahakil achshav b'sheina." The Ramah says, it's interesting that today, and remember, today for the Ramah is when? Is Ramah lives in the early 1500s, actually mid-1500s, in Krakow, Poland. You go to the Ramah Shul today in Krakow, actually in the Ramah Shul, is the Ramah's chair. The Ramah's chair, the Ramah's shtender that he uses, it's very dramatic. You can literally see it in his shul. Saw it in the shul. So the Ramah writes today, umash shenoagin lahakil achshav b'sheina. Many people don't sleep in the sukkah. Many people don't sleep in the sukkah. Why don't people sleep in the sukkah? She'en yeshenim b'sukkah rakam medaktikim mitzvos. That only those who are exceptionally festive or medaktikim mitzvos do it. Yesh omer mishum tzina. So the truth is, yesh sheyesh tzar lishom makom akarm. So he quotes the Mordechai, who says the poshut reason is very simple. In Eretz Yisrael Bosai on sukkahs, it's warm. It's warm. So therefore, again, you can go and you can sleep on the sukkah, no problem. In Chutz Lartz, in diaspora, it's very often cold during sukkahs. Therefore, again, you can't sleep in the sukkah. The Ramah says, I don't think that's the reason. Belimira, de mishum mitzvah, mishum de mitzvahs sukkah ish ubeiso, ish vi ishto, ki derech shu dar kol hashana. The Ramah says, because I think the mitzvah of sukkah is ish ishto, teshu kein taduru. You're supposed to live in the sukkah the way you live in your home. And the way you live in your home is how? Is with your wife. Ubemakom shelo yuchal lishon im ishto, she'en lo sukkah miyuchedes potter. Well, it's very interesting. The Ramah says that really the issue is that today our sukkahs don't necessarily afford a real degree of privacy. Because they don't afford a real degree of privacy, therefore a person won't be able to sleep in the sukkah with his wife. And if he can't sleep in the sukkah with his wife, then what? Then the ma'isa, he's potter from sleeping in the sukkah. However, he says, "V'tov lahachmer v'lios shamim ishto kimoshu dar kol hashana im efshar lios lo sukkah miyuchades." So it says the Ramah, but if you're able to build a particular type of tsanua sukkah that would allow you to be there with your wife, then Lamaise says the Ramah, you should try to build such a sukkah. So it's just very interesting that Lamaise, again, the Ramah already in the 1500s is attributing the lack of sleeping in the sukkah to the point that a person will not be able to sleep there with his wife. If a person can't sleep there with his wife, then it's not teshvu ke'in tadur, and therefore a person would be potter from sleeping in the sukkah under those circumstances. Again, the Ramah is not advocating for this. This almost seems to be a little bit more of what we call like a limud zuchus. He's trying to figure out why people are so makel on sleeping in a sukkah. So it seems to be two issues. Number one, because of the cold, which depending on when sukkahs falls out, may or may not be a factor. And number two, ultimately because of the inability of a person to sleep there together with his wife. Okay, let's begin the new Mishnah. Lulav HaGozel. Lulav HaGozel V'ayovish. So we'll say now, we're going to get into the halacha concerning dalad minim. If you have a stolen lulav, or a dried lulav, pasul, ultimately the sukkah is pasul. And I will say, if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says over here, gozel, pasul, why is gozel not good? Ulekachtem lochem, ksiv mishalachem, because we'll see the lulav has to be yours, and therefore if the lulav is stolen, the lulav is not yours. Yavesh, why is yavesh not good? Diba'inon mitzvah mihuderes, dichsiv v'andeyu. So I will say a dried lulav is not good. Why? Because lemaisa again, it's not hadur. It's not hidur. So we'll see that when it comes to dalad minim, one of the important pieces is that it has to be beautiful. And a dried lulav is not beautiful. Shela shera, if it's of an asher, so I will say an asher was a tree that was used for avodah zara. Vishal ir hanidachas, an ir hanidachas, so I will say, is a city which the majority of the inhabitants have worshipped idolatry, and therefore that city is wiped out. In both of these cases, puzzle. It's not good. And I will say, in these cases, the lulav is puzzle for a different reason. For the lulav of an asherah of Hodazar and an iranidachas, anything that's associated with asherah or iranidachas that worship idolatry has to be wiped out, has to be destroyed. Because this lulav is omeid to be destroyed, it's as if what? It's as if it lacks the requisite shear. And because it lacks the requisite shear, therefore lamaisa is going to be possible. Nikdam rosho, if the top of the lulav gets snipped off, or nifritsu alav, or the leaves. Rashi says nifritsu alav mishedra ve'inam mechubar ela al yedei aguda ki chuf yoshikar lav haderhu. Or nifritsu alav, Rabosei will see, means that the leaves are no longer attached to the spine of the lulav. In these cases, possible. Nifridu olav, however, again, if the leaves of the lulav, Rabosai, spread out. This is talking like, you can imagine, again, if you know how the lulav looks, if the leaves, instead of being closed to the shedra, are now spread out. Nifridu olav, kosher. The lulav is still kosher. Rabbi Huda says, yogdeno milamala. All you need to do is what? Tie the lulav on top. Rashi says, yogdeno milamala. Im nifridu alav yogdem, shihu olin im ashedre kishar lulav. Rabbi Huda says, if the leaves spread out, all you need to do is what? Go ahead and tie them together at the top. Tzine har barzel. Rabbi said, tzine har barzel is a particular type of lulav. Rashi says, mefarish b'gemara tzine dekolim. Ksheros. So we'll discuss in the Gemara what this is. This type of lulav is kosher. Lulav sheyesh bo shlosha tfachim. Still, if you have a lulav that has three tfachim in length, kedei lena'aneabo, in order to shake it, is kosher, is good. I will say, let's look at Rashi over here. So Rashi says, kedei lena'anea. Rashi says, mefarish b'gemara, shlosha tfachim tehe ashedra kineged arko shel hados. That the lulav must be at least three tfachim to measure up to the size of the hados. V'tefach yoser kedei lena'anea. And it must have one additional tevach to be able to shake it. Because most of we will see later on that the lulav must be shaken, must forward, backwards, in all different directions, in order to stop ruchos ra'os, bad winds, utilalim ra'im, and bad rains. We'll discuss that more in the Gemara. But Rabosei, what comes out of here is the following. What the Mishnah is saying is that the minimum length for the sukkah is four tefachim, right? Why? Because you need three ultimately to measure against the hadas, and one additional tefach for shaking purposes. So the minimum length of the lulav is going to be four tefachim. So what comes out from this mishnah is the following: stolen lulav is not good because it's not lachem, it's not yours. Dry lulav is not good because it's not noe, it's not beautiful. When it comes to dalad minim, ultimately you need beauty in the mitzvah. Asherah and iranidachas are not good. Why? Both these are idolatry, because any idolatrous items have to be what? Have to be destroyed. And an item that is only for destruction is as if what? Is if what? It lacks the requisite shear. I'll just say another application of that. If you were to go ahead and yet say use asherah oil. I don't know if there's such a thing. But if there was such a thing as asherah oil for your Ner Chanukah. If you were to use asherah oil for your Ner Chanukah, you would not be able to admit so. Why? Because it's as if you lack the requisite amount of shemen. Nikdam Rosho, if the top of the lulav was snipped off, Nifritzu Olav, or for that matter, Rabbi say again, Nifritzu Olav means, I want to be clear, that the leaves are not attached. The leaves are not attached to the shedra, to the spine, but you're reattaching them. You're tying them back on. Such a lulav is not good. Nifridu, which means, again, the leaves spread out. So they're not laying against the shedra. They're spread out. Is okay. Is kosher. Rabbi Huda says you still have to go ahead and tie it back up. Sinei Har Barzel, we don't know what Sinei Har Barzel are yet, but they're good. Minimum shir for lulav is going to be 4 tefachim. The boss will stop over here. We'll pick up a Mirat Hashem with this Gemara tomorrow. Tomorrow we start. Tomorrow, again, regular time, we begin a Mirat Hashem. We resume Das Hatzmacha tomorrow. Yavi Yomi at 6.